Welcome in to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast, taking over the hosting chair from Ben Brennis and back this week. It's good to be back on the Kuhn and Friends podcast. Evan Peterson here, joined as always by our namesake, Ray Kuhn. Ray, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. It's nice to have you back this week.
Yeah, it's nice when work doesn't get in the way of talking fantasy baseball. That's nice. Although, you know, me and you could have probably talked about, Grateful Dead and Company, all that good stuff. But apparently they want us to do a little baseball knowledge here.
Yeah, I guess we might as well. It is a few weeks before the draft season, before drafts end.
Yeah. If you have any thoughts on any of those other avenues, be sure to hit either me or Ray up on Twitter, and we'll be happy to indulge you. But tonight we decided to reach out, bring on another member of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits crew. We've got Colin Weatherwax in-house. Colin, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to get some fresh blood around these parts, you know. So used to having the same arguments with Ben and poking at Ben, and you know, it's nice to change the dynamic up every now and then.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know working with Ben is a little hard. I just did the invitational draft as a co-owner with him, so I'm glad you guys get a break from him. I'm glad I don't have to be on a podcast with him, so I'm definitely glad to get this going tonight.
We give Ben a hard time, but I would not want a podcast with literally anybody else. And it's not just because Ben does most of the work. But that's the best thing about Friends with Fantasy Benefits is we have so many personalities and voices, and everybody, kind of gives their take, and it's a very broad consensus. So that's nice. Colin, why don't you let everybody know where you can be found on the social media, anything that you're working on? Give yourself a little time and a little space to plug here.
Okay, yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at CWeatherwax13. I just got done writing my all-bus team for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Just went over a starting lineup of 11 players, two outfielders, two starting pitchers, two relief pitchers, and then the regular positions of just guys that are being way overdrafted in my eyes this draft season. So that just came out with on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I just did a podcast with a couple other guys from Friends with Fantasy Benefits with Randy Haynes and Mike at Mike the Rotocop. We did the part two of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational Review. I think it was a lot better than part one. We went over seven leagues, 15-team leagues each, kind of, you know, went out there and put myself out there calling one of the pitching staffs the worst one in the Invitational. So ready for that to come out today, probably later on this evening. And then the last thing that I kind of want to plug is I just got word, I think the beginning of this week, that I'm going to be in Las Vegas next week for the NFBC main event. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's super exciting. Almost as exciting as from the hints that you've dropped about who called out for having the worst rotation. It wasn't me, which is the biggest surprise ever. So I thank you for that. And yeah, I'll somebody putting information in your ear, I'll only take like 10% of your NFBC winnings. So don't worry, I won't tax you too hard.
Gotcha. That's fine. That's fine.
Ray, why don't you let people know where you can be found on social media, what you're working on?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. My newest article is going to be going up Wednesday on the website and line up and getting those perfect 23 guys. But sometimes you kind of tend to ignore the bench a little bit. If you get a little tired and you kind of just throw in darts at the dartboard. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a rhyme and a reason as to how to compile your bench. So taking a look at that, we got another few weeks before the season starts and got some exciting stuff coming up. And what about you, Evan? Where are you on Twitter?
At EvFWFB, just spouting random nonsense. The best place to find me, as always, is on these podcasts with Ben and Ray, or anything else that I might be doing in the audio sphere, or hit me up in the comment section, rate and review. 5 stars is basically a send button for me, so hit me up that way. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to extend the outfield conversation conversation from last week beyond the Giancarlo Stanton and Ender Inciarte talk that took about 4.5 hours.
And that was some riveting stuff, man. I'm really sorry you missed it.
On the roundtable, I said that I was surprised that you guys talked as long as you did for Inciarte without me on the podcast being the Braves homer. So I'm glad somebody was there to carry the torch. We're kind of going to break these down. We're looking at Ray's rankings here, and he's kind of got them sectioned off. We're going to look at guys in certain tiers, and they may not be exactly what you'll find for, you know, NFBC tiers, but it's close enough, and we'll tell them if guys can jump. We're kind of doing our own thing tonight, so damn the man, as it was. We'll start with Ray, because he wants to homer out up here in this range. And you listed Michael Conforto as a guy that you wanted to hit on. So, I mean, I have my own reservations as far as the health is concerned. That's my biggest reservation with Conforto. But if he's healthy, why don't you tell me what you might expect from him?
Well, I mean, obviously, everything with the Mets, we always have to take with a grain of salt, especially when it comes to injuries. I mean, who would think that a Major League Baseball player would be swinging at a pitch, swing and miss, and separate their shoulders? Just one of those things that, like, if there's any possible way for an injury to happen, it's going to happen to somebody on the Mets. So, with that being said, we're actually hearing something right now in spring training that we generally don't hear from the Mets, and that is that Conforto might actually be ahead of schedule. Now, I understand that that could be a little dreaded to say, all right, yeah, he's ahead of schedule, so you're going to get your expectations up. You want to make sure they don't rush him back. Every indication is that they have been rushing him back. And Conforto's draft status is kind of taking hold of the fact that he's going to miss the first month of the season. I mean, honestly, even if he did miss the whole first month of the season, obviously you then have to assume he's going to come back healthy, which, based on the injury, I mean, it's weird that it actually happened, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not going to happen again, that I think we're still looking at a 30-home-run hitter, and you're getting a huge discount based on Conforto's injury. I mean, last year, he had 373 at-bats. He hit .279 with 27 homers and 68 RBIs. So, I mean, if he can hit 27 homers, less than 400 at-bats, even if he misses the first month of the season, he's still going to get over 400 at-bats. So I think we're definitely looking at a 30-home-run hitter here. He has the power. He makes hard contact. I mean, he's going to be probably around a 270-ish hitter. He's one of those guys that I feel like should have better than the 70% contact rate that he does have. But I think overall, he's a 49th outfielder going off the boards in NFBC drafts with an ADP of 198. So to me, that's definitely a bargain. And if I have to wait a month, I'm going to wait a month.
Understandable. Colin, are you on the Conforto train, or do the injuries kind of scare you off a little bit?
I love Michael Conforto. I had him last year in a lot of my redrafts leagues. I drafted him in the fourth round in a startup dynasty league that we started right after the World Series, whenever, you know, the news was just a little bit towards conservative. And it always has to be with the Mets, like you said, Ray. So, love Conforto. I haven't drafted him yet, and that's very surprising since I've done about 20 drafts so far. But what you said, Ray, is, you know, I read something today on FanGraphs that said he might even make his debut next week in the Grapefruit League. So, if that's going to be the case, and if he barely misses any time going into the season, which is always risky, like you said, being a Met. I'm definitely on board with taking him at his ADP right now. He's a superstar in the making, I think. As long as the Mets don't mess him up like Terry Collins tried to do the first couple of years. He's got an elite OBP percentage. You know, it's up there with some of the guys that y'all talked about on the last show. So if he makes his spring debut next week, I just hope that he does not get rushed. I hope the Mets manage this right, and, you know, they play the long-term ball. If I have him in a dynasty league, I'm going to hold on to him. I'm not going to trade him until I see what I know that Conforto is. And even then, I'm probably going to hold on to him because he could be, you know, a top 10 outfielder for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, the walk rate is there from a young guy, which is something that you definitely like to see. When you start playing around with his splits a little bit, he hit 6 home runs off left-handed pitching in 109 plate appearances last year. He didn't hit any for the first 68 of his career against them in 15 and 16. And last year he did strike out, 30% of the time against left-handed pitching. But the right-handed pitching, I think there is, some kind of growth in these numbers. The fly ball rate was definitely down, which, shot his home run to fly ball rate through the roof, considering he hit, 21 home runs off of right-handed pitching last year. But it was 38.5% fly ball rate compared to 44.5% that he hit last year. So it's a kind of a weird thing to say, but if he puts more fly balls in the air and he goes back towards that batting profile, I think there could actually be room for growth with Conforto, which, once again, the injury curtail on his plate appearance numbers is going to be the big factor here. But if he puts up, 450 at bats, I think he could, kind of swing for the fences at 30 if things kind of bounce well for him. So definitely a guy to be interested in, but I've been kind of scared off on early drafts, and that's okay. Things like that are going to happen. Colin, why don't you introduce your guy in this range?
So my guy in this range is going to be Manuel Margot. Last year he had an injury cut season, but just what I saw from him in the few plate appearances that he had last year, I know the power, was a little surprising, being that he hit, 13 home runs last year. But the speed is always going to be there for Margot. He once stole 49 bases in the minors in one season. So he's a guy that I love pairing with a couple powerful guys that I get in the first 5 rounds of my draft, like a Stanton, like a Judge, anyone like that, because he's going to be leading off for the Padres, which used to be, he's leading off the Padres, but now with Will Myers, with Eric Hosmer behind him, I think he has, the 15 home runs, 30 plus stolen bases potential, and he's still going to provide you with the 270 average. So he had a pretty average BABIP last year at 309, and he still managed to hit 263. So even if that improves a little bit, he's not going to kill you like some of the other steel specialists like Billy Hamilton or some other guys late, that just kill you in the average, kill you in the power, and just only provide that one category. So with him being at the top of the Padres lineup, he's going to have over 100 runs, possibility of 70 RBIs. There's great RBI guys behind him like Myers and Hosmer that are just going to drive him in after he steals second and possibly third base. So pairing him with a couple powerful guys, I love doing this draft season.
Yeah, he's falling in a really weird spot as far as, I'm looking at the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational ADP sheet. If you're wanting to kind of play along at home, you can find it out on Twitter and a number of different sources. Our boy Smata put it together, kind of a Excel wizard, and it's really fun to kind of play around in. But he's in this kind of string of outfielders that goes Yasiel Puig, Ryan Braun, Ian Desmond, Eddie Rosario, Margot, Enciarte, and Adam Eaton. So kind of these not huge power guys, going to chip in a handful of steals. I don't know that I necessarily like him hands above anybody else, but he is a guy that's getting a lot of hype, and part of that is from different outlets and whatnot. I think it's going to push his cost up just a little bit too high for me, but I definitely understand what you're saying about the revamped Padres lineup. Ray, obviously there's no end to how much we can talk up the Padres. Why don't you, sweeten them up a little bit more?
I mean, honestly, I thought I was high on Margot, and then listening to Colin, it kind of put me back in my place a little bit. I mean, the one thing that I do like about him is that for a young player, he only struck out 20% of the time last year. You would like, as a leadoff hitter, see him walk more than 6.6% of the time, especially if you're going to look to him to score 100 runs, which I'm honestly not sure that's possible. I mean, maybe in a few years, but I mean, he had 53 last year in 126 games. So I'm not sure that he's going to be able to double that total, even if he gets up to 140 or 150 games. And again, I think 70 RBIs is also maybe a tad ambitious, but to all the players that Evan named kind of in that tier. I mean, I'm really trying not to go back on the Inciarte thing. I'm not going to cue you up to go on an Inciarte rant since you missed it last week. But Desmond is probably the only guy in that group that I would take over Margot. And that's kind of part of my argument against guys like Inciarte and Eaton. Margot's going to give you pretty much the same amount of steals, but he's going to give you more home runs and more power potential.
Yeah, if you want to hear my thoughts on Inciarte, and let's be honest, nobody cares. But if you do, spoiler alert, on the roundtable, you might get to hear some of my thoughts. So make sure that you're checking that out. Colin, join me on that. That's an awesome format that our buddy Mike is putting together. So be sure you're checking that out if you're not. We'll get to my guy in this range. He's a guy that I talked to when I was, talked about on the Twins, preview podcast when I was on there, Eddie Rosario. He had the big second half last year. You look at the second half splits. He had 17 home runs, in the second half. I know I keep saying that, that was tied for 16th in the majors during that time, tied with guys like Mike Trout, Charlie Blackman, Jose Abreu. Our boy Kyle Seager, he's tied for 12th in RBIs with, you know, Eric Hosmer. We were talking about Padres, Brian Dozier, who I'm really high on. It's just really good improvements in him against right-handed pitching. And he's a guy that is, once again, kind of getting a little bump from being talked up on certain outlets. Ray, are you in on Eddie Rosario, or do you think he's being pushed up a little too high, kind of like me?
I'm in, but I'm not buying all the helium. I'm buying maybe 70% of it. I mean, 16.4 home run to fly ball rate last year, and he hit the 27 homer, so that's not really that crazy. 40% fly ball rate, 37.4% fly ball rate. Career average is 37.7. So again, what we saw from Rosario, I think, for the most part, is pretty repeatable. But again, I feel like he kind of just blends into that 25 to 30 home run guy group with a decent batting average. He's going to chip in a few steals. So, I mean, yeah, I like him, but he's not somebody I'm going to go out of my way to get. What about you, Colin?
Yeah, I tend to agree with not going out of my way to get him. Like I said, I'm in so many drafts that every time I saw his name come up, I always discarded him. And, you know, based on my team construction, I was like, why am I discarding this guy? So I did some research on him. I know everyone talks about his fantastic second half, but he batted .287 in the first half and then .292 in the second half. And that was in the same amount of plate appearances, one less hit in the second half than he had in the first half. And I think the inflation that he had last year and the home runs and the RBIs, I think basically the RBIs for sure was based on that Minnesota team just kind of taking off in the second half. The team around him just they all chipped in, and you just don't see that very often in the MLB where, you know, guys down the order, first, second, third, seventh, eighth, they just started raking, and that's whenever they started, you know, to put on their win streak. So he's definitely a guy that I'll go after. Like you said, Ray, I'm not going to go out of my way to get him, but after I did some more research on him, if I can get a guy with that high average and he can provide me with 20-plus home runs and then even 10 steals, which he had 9 last year, that's great value with where he's going at in this range.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you know, I said big second half, but it was a kind of a piecing of some minor gains as far as, you know, walking more, striking out less. But, I mean, then there was other big changes to his batting profile, like his fly ball percentage, which was up 10%, basically 10%, up to 42% in the second half. So, I mean, I think people are buying, you know, the end of his season last year. But I do understand what you're saying, Colin, that it does kind of discredit what he did in the first half to only focus on the second half. So I apologize for kind of framing it in that light. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we will be right back with more baseball knowledge. If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all of his info for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You will get a $50 rebate for Vertex betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. That was really exciting for me. Like, I've always wanted to say, and now a word from our sponsors, because I'm just a weirdo like that. If it says anything about my personality, if this helps anybody understand me more, when I grew up, I wanted, like, my biggest goal in life was to be the person who said live from New York at Saturday Night Live. And that drove a lot of my, like, motivations until I was, like, 15 and I realized it was never going to happen. So we'll get back on the actual baseball talk here. As we hop into the next little tier of outfielders. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to throw my guy out here because I think he is somebody, given the recent news that we have going on, and we can kind of hitch him to Ray's guy here if we want to just talk about the situation in general. But Delano DeShields going to be hitting leadoff for the Rangers. Big steals guy. I think he's definitely somebody if you're looking for a name down on, you know, ADP boards, because obviously, it's not taking into account, you know, all of this news. It's going to count for a lot of the stuff that's happened before. I think he can be a big difference maker if he puts up a large stolen base number, which I think he is completely capable of. In case you hadn't heard, there's been enough people griping about it on Twitter. It looks like Willie Calhoun is going to spend the first month or so down in AAA so they can bank another year of service time. I think, Colin, was that you that posted that tweet that said it looked like 35 days would probably be how long we'd be without Calhoun?
No, it wasn't me, but as a Texas Rangers fan, I have to go fold and put away my Willie Calhoun jerseys, all 15 of them, for another month, so I'm pretty disappointed about that.
I knew there was a reason I was making that connection. but yeah, if you want to talk about DeShields, or Ray had marked off Carlos Gomez to kind of talk about in this range, you can kind of throw him in the same breath. What do you think about the Rangers outfield as it stands right now?
Yeah, so I'll hop on the DeShields bandwagon first of all. I'll just be a little bit of a homer here. So the big thing with DeShields and how he compares to a lot of the other speedsters, kind of like I said with Margot, he's completely opposite of Margot, though, because he gets on base at a huge rate. The only thing that the Rangers need to do is figure out what the hell they're going to do and just do it. You know what I mean? They need to give DeShields all the bats that he deserves. They need to stop playing around with Carlos Gomez like they did last year. They don't need to give, you know, their fifth or sixth outfielder any time. Just let this guy play, because he's going to be at the top of this lineup, surrounded by Joey Gallo, Adrian Beltre, Nomar Mazara, you know, guys that are going to get him in as long as he, you know, gets on base. I just need them to give him the room to struggle. He's going to struggle. He's still a young player. But as long as they let him run free and they just let him play, I think, you know, taking him at outfielder, you know, 73 is where he's going. Actually, 49, excuse me. That's a steal, not to be, you know, no pun intended, but it's a steal at his draft position there to get him.
And Ray, do you have any thoughts about DeShields? And then we can kind of move on over to Gomez.
All right. I mean, I guess with DeShields, I mean, it is what it is. He's going to steal probably about 30 bases and give you a solid enough batting average. It's not really going to help you, but it's also not going to hurt you. And he's going to contribute in the runs category, too. So you have a two-category player, not really any power there. I think he's going to have a pretty long leash, or at least he should if they do the right thing. So, I mean, yeah, there's going to be some growing pains, but if you're looking for steals when it gets to that point in the draft, I think it's definitely a conversation you have to have with yourself. And then as far as Gomez, I mean, Gomez is just kind of one of those players that still just hangs around. He's over in Tampa this year. He's my 60th ranked outfielder. He's coming off the board. NFBC-wise, it's the 84th outfielder. For a good portion of the draft season, Heat and have a team, so I think that kind of influenced things as well. But, I mean, you can get them after pick 300, so to me, really anything after pick 300 is kind of not necessarily an educated guess, but I mean more of like a flyer, like, all right, you're looking to hit a little bit of a home run there with him. And I think Gomez, he's not a perfect player, but I think he can still get you 15-15. And he's going to be batting cleanup in Tampa's lineup for whatever the heck that's worth.
Yeah, I completely spaced and still had Gomez as a Ranger on this list, so I don't know what I was smoking. But yeah, there was, you know, this thing of how Gomez's approach changed when he came on over to Texas. He was squaring up righties a lot better than he ever had in his entire career. He'd only had two seasons where he had a hard hit percentage off right-handed pitching that was over 30%. I'm not factoring in the season where he had exactly a 30. So if you want to hold me to the flame on that one, okay, he had three. Last year, his hard hit percentage off righties was almost 42%. So a little bit of an outlier on that one. Not 100% sure that, you know, we can believe in, you know, a home run to fly ball percentage off righties that is 20%, even though he's shown to hit, you know, mid-teens. You know, maybe rolling back a little bit there. Maybe rolling back because he's, you know, 32 years old. Or maybe just rolling back because, you know, Tampa, while the team hit a lot of home runs, I don't necessarily think that their ballpark is very conducive for that kind of thing, even, you know, if some of the parks in the AL East are a little friendlier confines. Gomez is a guy that I kind of see as a lottery ticket, nothing more. And it's like a dollar lottery ticket. You know, I'm expecting to lose a lot more than I'm expecting to win anything. So, Colin, are you closer to where I'm at on Gomez, or are you closer to where Ray is with everything?
You know, I might be on an island here. I think he's being drafted just based on name value. And since he was in Texas, you know, he's been an average player everywhere he's been since he was in Milwaukee. But I think if he didn't have the name, if you just provided me with the stats, you know, a low average, he might get to 15-15. But he is getting older, so those steals could definitely go down. And then he's never been a great plate discipline guy in the first place. So if he does bad, I don't see how, even though Tampa Bay is going to be a bad team, we all think, I don't see how they can just trot him out there. They might just DFA him and, you know, not have to pay him. But I mean, the plus size is he's batting cleanup, but as far as, you know, drafting him in this range, I know you said he's a lottery ticket. I'll take my lottery ticket and I'll put it on Victor Robles. I'll put it on Jesse Winker. I'll put it on guys like that that have the pedigree, and they haven't failed yet. So I want to see someone that can provide me with, you know, 50, 60 to 100, you know, plus draft slots ahead, where Gomez could either be right at the same place or just fall off the map completely.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong that Gomez was definitely, you know, a first, second round name for a couple years. That was back when he was stealing 35 to 40 bases. And then he went on this 2-year binge where he, in 2015, his on-base percentage was 314. 2016, it was 298. Last year, bumps back up to 340, but he only had 13 steals on, you know, roughly the same number of plate appearances. It was about 50 less than the highest year out of that. But, I mean, still, if he goes back to stealing 25 bases, okay, we can start having a conversation here. But like Colin was saying, and as I know me and Ray have kind of talked about towards the bottom, really excited about, and I do think you're correct in saying that Gomez has some name hype. Ray, do you think there is something to the name value, or do you think, you know, there's actual like skill potential here?
I think there's a little something to the name value, but then I think at the same point, so many people have been burned by Gomez when they took him in the early rounds of drafts a few years ago. So I think it kind of being against Gomez, and you're looking at him a little differently than you'd look at other guys that hit 17 homers and still 13 bases in 105 games. I mean, at the end of the day, the guy's still going to be batting cleanup for a major league team. And maybe he gets 70 RBIs and hits 20 homers. And even if he steals 15 bases, like that's still worth something. That's still, like, I'm not necessarily sure that a Winker is going to hit more than 20 homers this year. Obviously, yeah, there's more potential for it, and it's more of a boomer bust pick, and I do happen to like Winker, but I think for the first month of the season, at least until Gomez struggles and then Tampa Bay does just end up dumping him off, I think there's enough here that if you just take it at face value, it's worth, you know, a 22nd round pick or whatever it is.
Understandable. The other name that we kind of had down in this list was Trey Mancini, a guy that I'm a little lower on. Colin, I believe this was your guy. Did you want to go ahead and start off with Mancini here?
Yeah, I might be on an island here as well because I love Mancini. I have him as my outfielder 24 this year, and that's being as his dual position. Yeah, you know, with him being in Baltimore, he was a highly touted prospect. But going up in that ballpark, I love it for his skill set, his power. He'll always have a place to play because I'm not a big Chris Davis fan. So if he starts to struggle and, you know, they want to move Trumbo to the outfield for whatever reason or they have Austin Hayes, they can just slot, you know, they can slot Mancini over at first base. And he's always going to have that playing time. So I'm also a big guy on Tim Beckham this year. So with him leading off, and then Scope, who I think is going to regress, but he's still, you know, a great major league player. And then Machado, and he's batting right behind them. He's going to have the RBI chances. I see him batting, you know, he'll provide a pretty good average, about 275 to 290. And then 30 home runs and 100-plus RBIs I think is definitely in the realm of possibility. So with him going in the range of the guys we just talked about, I'm taking him in every draft that I can just because I'm so high on him. And I don't see a way besides injury risk or anything like that, that he could fail me at this value.
Ray, is there any way that Mancini could fail you at this value?
I think at the value Colin has him ranked at, yes. I think at the value you're getting him at, no. And I think I'm splitting my time on your island and off your island on Mancini. I think if it wasn't for Aaron Judge, Mancini, and Benintendi, Mancini would have gotten a lot more attention last year. I think he kind of had one of the more quiet 20-plus home run rookie seasons. And I'm not necessarily a fan of his .352 BABIP last year, so that gives me some pause to say that he's going to be able to repeat .293. I'd like to see him walk a little more. I mean, I think he has the power. Does he repeat the 19.8 home run to fly ball rate? I'm not necessarily sure. I think for me, he's ultimately more of a 20 to 25 home run guy, and I'm not necessarily sure he's going to push 30, but I think he'll get enough runs and RBIs in what is a pretty good Baltimore lineup. And again, he's still a young player, so he still does have some growing to do.
Yeah, one thing while I'm kind of, you know, scanning over the numbers and thinking back to conversations, you know, we've had on this podcast, you know, you look at a 51% ground ball rate. Colin, do you think there's maybe growth for him that he can put more balls in the air? Do you think that he's a guy that doesn't necessarily need to have a high fly ball percentage to produce, you know, a 25 home run season again? If somebody came to you with those concerns, like I am, what would you say to them?
I think you can have a lot of those concerns about a lot of players, you know, especially coming into their second season after they broke out as a rookie. But one of the things about Mancini, I think whenever he started the year, you know, in the lineup was this guy is only going to hit lefties. And so once he started to rake against lefties and they put him in the lineup every day, towards the end of the season, if you can believe it, he had identical splits in average. He batted .293 against lefties and .293 against righties. So I think, you know, being a young player, I still think there's room to grow. And like you said, Ray, I'm not taking him where I have him ranked because I know where the industry sees him at. So I can take the discount at a guy that I really love this year, and he has the dual position eligibility at first base and outfield this year. I think, like you were asking, Evan, if he has that ground ball rate, I still think he can improve upon it, especially in the ballpark that he's in. And then all we need to see from the guys ahead of him is Timmy Beckham get on base, Manny Machado do what he does, and maybe even steal a couple bags for him. And he could be right in the running of where I have him ranked at the end of the season.
Interesting. I mean, I still have those concerns. You know, you kind of quelled them a little bit, but I'm still gonna play my cards a little close to the vest there. But I can see why, you know, the excitement is there, and I can definitely see, like Ray was talking about, I can see why he was overshadowed by guys like, you know, Benintendi, and he probably would have gotten more hype had those guys not been around. So We'll jump on down to the next tier here, and we'll go ahead and we'll start with Ray in this area, who gave us Stephen Piscotty. So tell me what you like about Stephen's new digs.
All right. So, I mean, the first thing is Piscotty obviously came up 2016, had a nice debut, hit 273, 25 homers, 85 RBIs. So obviously that got a lot of people excited. Cardinals are a solid organization. You're expecting a repeat of that last year. Didn't happen. Said he hit 235, 9 homers, 39 RBIs. He also had about 240 less at-bats, 341 compared to 582 the year before. If you take a close look at Piscotty, or a relatively close look at Piscotty, whatever you want to call it, there's not really much different between the 2 years as far as his metrics, as far as some of the underlying skills. He had a 28% hit rate in 2017, 32% in 2016. But again, I mean, he has about an average contact rate, above average power, but the 2 years, like, there wasn't really anything jumped off the page at me. And then you have the whole situation with his mother and his mother's health. He ended up getting traded to Oakland this offseason, which is where he's from, so he'll be closer to home. I think that should do a lot to help him from the mental perspective. He's going to have regular playing time again in Oakland. I'm not sure that we're going to that there's a reason not why he's not going to repeat what he did in 2016 as compared to what he did in 2017.
Colin, are you a believer in Stephen Piscotty this year?
I like him a lot better in Oakland than I did in St. Louis with that crowded outfield. I do think that 2016 is the peak for what we can see from Stephen Piscotty. I know we can go outside the baseball metrics and talk about, you know, his family, like you said, Ray, and what that can do for a player just being in more comfortable and where they're at. And if he gets the playing time, he might creep up into the 16 to 19 home runs, might push for the 260, 270 average. But being in that lineup, you know, the Oakland Athletics lineup, it's not anywhere as near as good as the Cardinals lineup was the year that he tore it up. I do like Semien. I know Chris Davis is going to bring everyone home in front of him. And then Stephen Piscotty is going to be hitting solo home runs if he gets, you know, if he gets the chance. So I do think 2016 is the peak, but going at this range, you know, going as the outfielder number 72 off the board, he's a guy that does have the upside that some of the guys behind him might not. And he has shown it before, so there is a chance that he can get back to his peak year of 2016. And if he does, it could provide great value. Ray, do you think 2016 is his peak value, or do you think he can build off of that?
No, I think that is his peak. I'm not sure he's going to do anything better than that. But, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, I'll take 25 homers, and even if we discount it down to 70 or 75 RBIs from the 73rd outfielder off the board.
Yeah, and I was trying to pull up Stephen Piscotty's NFBC ADP data from last year. I'm pretty sure this is last year. I've got him at about 130 overall. He was the 30th outfielder. That sounds about right. Yeah. It's one of these scenarios, and this is always a great exercise to do when you're in draft season, is to just kind of go back, and not that last year is the only thing that matters or anything like that, but if we were excited about Stephen Piscotty last year and we're not as, I mean, yes, there's excitement around him, but why is he being pushed down boards is what it is. And I think, you know, like you said, the personal stuff and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think as a player, he's necessarily eroded in areas that are not fixable. And the most fixable area for him is the playing time, like you said. And I think there's definitely going to be a lot of it in Oakland. And I'm real happy to get Stephen Piscotty in my drafts. It just hasn't necessarily shaken out for me as such. So another guy, if you've listened to me and Ben talk for you know, the past year or so, guy that I've been higher on is Max Kepler. I know he's got his issues against left-handed pitching, but he's kind of got the story working for him as far as the family background. I believe both of his parents were ballerinas in like Germany or wherever the heck he came from. And it's just always been one of these things that, you know, he's got a lot of, you know, body control. He's an athletic dude. He does have a above average, I would say. I mean, some people might call it average, but I think there is a slight boost to what he could do against right-handed pitching if, you know, all of the chips kind of fell his way. And he's a guy that's getting acclimated to the game. You know, he was a late start guy. So I think there's more growth in Kepler than a lot of other people in the industry do. Colin, am I on the island here as far as Kepler's concerned, or are you gonna join me on my little island here?
I might join you for a little bit, and if it gets, you know, too cold over there, I'll just leave real quick. With Kepler, I think the best thing for him, and I know we don't like to use the word platoon splits in fantasy, but it might just be better for him to only play against righties because he is inept at hitting lefties. He's a talented guy. I love the talent, especially against right-handed pitching, but he kind of reminds me of Jake Lamb with a lot of less power. He's hitting 272 against righties, which is great, but whenever you throw in a 152 average against lefties, it brings him down to a tier and average where if I draft a guy that's going to be hitting, you know, 230, 240 for the season, I want to be able to say, well, I got 40 home runs from this guy, or well, I got 60 steals from this guy, like a Billy Hamilton. So with Max Kepler, he's kind of like Carlos Gomez, where he's going to give you that 15 and 10 or 20 and 5 or some kind of combination of that. You know, he's steady. You know what his stats are going to be at the end of the season. But I think if they played him against righties only, I'd be more interested in just kind of playing the matchups in a daily transactions league than him playing against lefties and just tanking that average.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, you said the magic word as far as platoon splits are concerned, as far as, you know, definitely wanting to be in a daily league. The other thing is, and like you were saying, is you can kind of curate his batting average if you're able to play him in these spots. It's like the conversation we had on Yasmani Grandal. Yes, people will look at his overall batting average and say, ew, disgusting, and leave him at the draft table in those scenarios. But if you realize that, okay, maybe this 220 batting average that I'm looking at, or 230, whatever, and it's not really going to be that by the time I have Max Kepler plus replacement player, you know, my average is probably going to look a lot better. If you can kind of manipulate that at the table, I think it's an interesting way to gain an advantage in those leagues. Ray, why don't you give me your thoughts on Kepler here?
I'm not a huge Kepler fan. I mean, I'm trying to, but I mean, he's still, I guess he did pick up baseball late. He's still a little raw. He's 25, so I mean, this is kind of the put up or shut up year for him, I think. I mean, I totally agree with what you guys said, that he's more suited for a platoon. Hopefully it moves that way, but then obviously you're losing at bats, and then it's a little harder to set a lineup. I mean, you're getting a better batting average, but you're potentially losing on some counting stats. It's a weekly league. I mean, if you look at his ADP since March 1st, he's the 75th outfielder off the board. Right above him is Jackie Bradley Jr., Altair, Brinson, Robles, and then Kepler. And then you have Malik Smith, Schebler, Carlos Gomez beneath him. I'm probably taking just about every single one of those guys instead of Kepler, to tell you the truth.
And I mean, I don't think anybody would fault you for that. I don't know that there's anybody. I'm taking a glimpse at the Twins roster resource page right now. There's not a ton on their bench. I mean, they've got Robbie Grossman, Eduardo Escobar, Kenny Vargas is still around here for some reason, even though we've got Joe Mauer and Lomo on there. It's just a whole lot of meh. And I don't really know that, you know, like if I'm the Twins, I'm excited to throw out Robbie Grossman over Kepler, or, you know, anything along those lines. So I think he's going to find his way into enough playing time and I hope he figures it out, but that's praying for, you know, the optimism instead of, you know, gambling in realism, which can often turn out to bite you in the ass. pardon my French. We'll go ahead and move on to the next guy here. Colin, who's the next guy that you had on your list here?
My guy in this range is actually Jesse Winker, who Ray kind of touched on earlier, as he's not as high as I am. But I've been on Jesse Winker since the start of his prospect hype. I've been stashing him in a dynasty league for 2 years now, and I'm ready for the breakout this year. I think in fantasy this year, a lot of people think that, you know, he won't provide you with the average. But if you play in an OBP league, he has a great walk percentage. He's at 11% right now. And being on a team with Joey Votto in that stacked Cincinnati lineup and that great ballpark, he's projected to hit second on roster resource. So if he's sandwiched between Billy Hamilton and Joey Votto and he stays healthy all year and he gets on base, I could see him providing, you know, up to 20 home runs. I think the power is there. He just has to kind of untap it. And being in that ballpark is definitely going to speed up that process. He could provide me with 5 steals, a high average, probably in the 270, 280 range. And with my drafting, I don't like to tank on a certain stat, especially not average. So if he just provides me with that middling 270, 260, I'm perfectly fine with that. With Cincinnati, I've been a huge Scott Schebler hater. I hated him ever since he's been in the league. I don't know why. It might just be his face. I just kind of want to punch it. But with Schebler, he's projected to be their starting right fielder and then Winker and left. I don't see how they're going to keep Adam Duvall, who's proved it, you know, year in and year out for the past 2 years on the bench. So with that stacked lineup in Cincinnati, him hitting second, I have him as my outfielder 44 in my rankings. So I'm definitely grabbing him every draft that I've done this year.
Yeah, I think Cincinnati's got a move in them. As roster resource has it right now, they have Adam Duvall on the bench. I don't necessarily know how that works. But there's, you know, you've kind of been following the playing time with Cincinnati as you kind of think about it. If Senzel is going to come in at shortstop and they still like Suarez, is Peraza just going to get absolutely ditched? Is he going to move to second? Is Scooter Jeanette going to platoon? Is there like there's a logjam here. There's a move that needs to be made. Somebody needs to blow an Achilles. I really didn't want to say that, but I kind of got halfway in and didn't have a way out. But there's just something that needs to happen here. There's too much playing time. It's almost a worse scenario than the Cubs. And it's just that none of them are as good as anybody on the Cubs, really. Ray, so you're not a Winker guy?
The playing time is a little bit of a hang-up for me. I guess it's twofold. One, the playing time, but I mean, I think he honestly should be playing over Schebler. I'm not really sure that why we need to have this conversation, to tell you the truth.
30 home runs.
And 240 batting average. I mean, I think Winker's going to bat at the top of the lineup when he does play. I think that's been made clear, and I'm not worried about his batting average either. So I think when he's in the lineup, he's going to do enough to stay there. And like Colin was talking about, I think it's really an issue of him touching into that power and developing that power at major league level. I think with Winker, it might be the case of we're 1 year too soon on him. So that's kind of where I go on him, that I think we're maybe just 1 year too soon. But it also wouldn't surprise me to see him have like a Trey Mancini type of season. Maybe a few less home runs, but that kind of year.
So do we think that just like, is Hamilton going to hit at the top of this lineup? Is the floor finally going to drop out? He's going to be pushed towards the back end. I think that's a more, you know, realistic scenario for what could happen. I mean, they don't really have a solid, you know, number two hitter. I mean, I think if you look at the projections as far as like on base percentage, Winkers is probably, Joey Votto is obviously in a class all to himself, and then Winker will probably be somewhere around like what, a 350. Suarez might be a little bit lower than that. Like, there's just not any good candidates for the top of this order, and I think they kind of, even if they're not going to be in a compete mode, and they're obviously not going to be with their rotation looking the way that it does right now, I mean, I still think you want to get Winker up to speed, and once, you know, Senzel's here, I think there is actually a lot of intrigue in this Reds lineup, whether it's a year too early or too late. I mean, that's kind of a personal preference thing. Obviously, Colin sounds like he's a little more in. Ray is, you know, a little more out, and I'm straddling the fence, which is always the comfiest position out here.
Hey, Ray, one quick question, Evan, before we, you know, move on to the next guy.
Go for it.
So, Ray, I know you said that you think we might be a year early on Winker. Wouldn't you rather be a year early than a year late and kind of chase those stats that, you know, that his prospect pedigree, that his ratios show that he could be?
I mean, it depends where you're taking them in the draft, I think, is kind of what it comes down to. But I'm thinking that it's going to probably be towards, like, August, like July, August, when we see that power start to really pick up and we see him maybe end up with more regular playing time. But, I mean, I mean, obviously I'd rather be a year early than a year late. But, I mean, it's obviously...
That's more tied to price, though, right? Like, being early, you're getting there before everybody else, and therefore you're probably going to get a little bit of a discount. If you're late, then the buzz is already caught up, and then he's kind of like think Jonathan VR. You could either be a year early and get him when he's going 25th round of your draft, or you can be a year late and pay the third round price for him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the Dynasty League, it's a little different, but I mean, if I can get Winker, right, throw him on my bench, and I have room, yeah, I'm definitely going to run to be a year early on that, but I'm not going to rush to be a year early and have him in my starting outfield to start the year.
Okay, that's a fair point.
It's funny that you bring this up, and the biggest thing people have heard me bitch about is that I drafted Scott Schebler 2 years ago in a dynasty, or 3 years, 2 years ago, the year that Adam Duvall came out and hit a bunch of home runs, and that I didn't have the roster space to keep Schebler, and then that asshole came out and hit 30 home runs last year. So if we're talking about punchable face, I'm definitely with Colin as far as that's concerned. All right, let's go ahead and we'll slide down towards the end here. We're getting into some kind of murkier names. One of the guys that Colin throughout, I'm definitely in on, not just because he was a former Brave, but why don't you tell me why you're wanting to highlight Malik Smith down here, Colin?
Well, I loved what he did whenever he was with the Braves. I was so surprised whenever he got traded away. I was really disappointed because he was just starting to break out with them. But even before all the moves that Tampa Bay did this year, I was all in on him being my last round pick. You know, being someone that I draft in a draft and hold league, I usually don't take guys that don't provide me anything in one category, which is what Malik does in home runs. But whenever you're getting a guy this late, he's going 80th as far as outfielders on ADP and FBC. So whenever you get him that late, I think he has the potential to lead off for this lineup. They have Denard Span slotted there right now, and I just don't see that lasting. I think he's going to wash out this season. He's going to provide you with a decent average, and you can't say that for a lot of the speedsters. You know, I'll go back to the Billy Hamilton. Well, you're going to be tanking that average, but you're going to be getting elite steals. So let me pair two guys together that, you know, won't tank my average, that'll get me the same amount of steals that Billy Hamilton will. And he might even score close to 100 runs. So, yeah, I'm definitely on the island with you this time, Evan. We love Malik, and I hope that Tampa Bay doesn't mess him up.
Well, and I mean, if anybody could mess him up, I mean, the Braves probably could too, but the Rays could mess around and burn him out. I mean, it's real hard to play pin the tail on his batting average if you're just looking at the raw numbers of what he did in the majors. 2016, he hit .238 in his small time with the Braves. Last year, he hit .270 as a Ray. Maybe he figured something out. Maybe it's the .347 BABIP. But the one thing, and it's not fantasy related, is if we had to get rid of Malik to bring on Gohara, and I'm kind of higher on, I know the industry is high on Gohara, but I think he could be a really interesting part of our rotation this year. Then, you know, so be it. Ray, why don't you give us your Malik thoughts?
I think if we're going on an island with Malik, I think I need a chair to join you guys there. Again, the price that you're getting him at, so absolutely late. He should have regular playing time, and the guy is freaking fast. I mean, he stole 16 bases, and he had 282 plate appearances last year. So even if he gets 500 plate appearances this year, he's walking 8% of the time. 34-40 stolen bases seems to me like it should be pretty certain. And if you're getting him this late in your drafts, so he's not costing you anything, there's no risk. I mean, you have somebody like a Billy Hamilton that you got to take around, what, like fourth round, fifth round, whatever it is. And to me, Hamilton might be just as much of a playing time risk as Smith. And you have to invest so much more in him. Those 20 stolen bases and the price, it's not worth it to me. So can we Malik Smith any day of the week?
Yeah, there might be some, you know, we talk about hitting Malik at the top of the lineup. He was not good against left-handed pitching either in 2016 or 2017. But last year he walked less than 2.5%, struck out almost 35% against left-handers. So that could be a hurdle towards a full-time spot at the top of the order. But I, you know, was high on Malik when he was in the Braves system. And just because he's a Brave doesn't mean that I still don't like him. I know for other people that, you know, might sway things, but doesn't really matter for me. Another guy that I've just never really been in on, and I'm happy that he's going to get the playing time this year, it looks like, but he still plays on a crap team, in my opinion. Ray, why don't you tell me why you're highlighting Jorge Soler in this range?
I was in on Soler last year when the Cubs traded him to the Royals for Wade Davis. I was like, all right, Royals gave up their closer, all-star closer, for granted just for 1 year, but still they gave up their all-star closer. They're getting this kid Soler. Soler has ridiculous power. He's going to get regular playing time. Clearly, I was a year early on Soler. I'm hoping that now, I mean, it seems like everyone's kind of forgotten about him. He's a 106th outfielder coming off the board in NFBC drafts. You can't say enough things about how bad he was with the Royals last year. But then they sent him to AAA, 267, had 24 homers and 273 at-bats. So, I mean, obviously, there's some power potential here. There's some potential here. He's going to be an average liability, so you're looking at a one- to two-dimensional player with the RBIs. For whatever it's worth, he's batting in the middle of Kansas City's lineup. Bonifacio getting suspended helps Soler's cost for playing time, so I think you have to factor that in. I mean, it's really just one of those draft and hold, late round dart throws. Let's see, maybe he actually lives up to this potential.
Ray, do you think Soler has the ability to live up this potential?
I think he can be a 30 home run hitter.
I meant to say Colin. Sorry. The booze kicked in. Colin.
Yeah, I'm going to jump on the boat with Ray here. I love Soler, especially at his value. I was one of the guys just like you, Ray, last year. I was a year too early. I invested a little bit more than I should have in him. Just thinking, you know, going to a place where he's going to get everyday playing time. And of course, that didn't happen. But this year, getting him at the discount that you said, you know, 100th overall as an outfielder, The talent was never the issue with Jorge Soler. It was always the opportunity, and I think the opportunity is there this year. It was there before the Bonifacio suspension. He was going to be their full-time DH, and now he's locked into that role. He might even play a little bit of outfield, but I hope he stays as a DH to keep him healthy. I love that Moustakas went back there to kind of put him under his wing if he can. You know, there's a lot of veteran leadership at that team, so I'd love to see him, you know, in his ADP here, just break out finally, you know, give us everything that we were drooling over whenever he was in the Cubs organization, and, you know, provide something out of nothing, especially in a draft and hold league or in your last round pick.
Yeah, it's real interesting as far as Soler, and obviously, you know, you get the Soler power, which was kind of his, you know, nickname in Chicago or whatever, because he did show that he had a little bit of pop. It was always kind of a running joke among me and my friends of who had bigger swing and miss stuff between him and Javi Baez, and I think if you're looking at, like, a batting eye and power profile and whatnot, it's a decent parallel to draw. I think, you know, Solaire could, you know, put up a 25 spot, like, you know, Baez definitely could. The one thing, and if you've heard me talk about Baez, you've heard me say this before, is that at least he understands that he, you know, sucks at what he's doing, and he's just swinging all the time. It doesn't matter if he's making contact less than 66% of the time. He's still swinging the bat over 56% of the time. Solaire doesn't do that, and he doesn't show up on qualified leaderboards, but if he did, as far as zone contact percentage, he would have been a bottom five hitter last year, down with Javier Baez and Chris Davis and whatnot. I think there's a lot of potential, like, you know, Colin was talking about sinking your batting average and whatnot. That's a definite risk that you have to be prepared to take on with Solaire. So I don't know if people get so distracted by the home runs that they might forget to plan that in. So if you're at the draft table, make sure that you're doing that. That's why we're giving you this information. But I do think the power potential is there. I think I'd like to see the batting profile develop a little bit more for me to be, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand he's going basically for free, but I mean, there kind of might be a reason why, huh?
Yeah, there might be, yeah.
It's possible, but, you know, with a guy, a big thing for me this year is doing the post-type sleepers. You know, taking a guy like him, taking the chance. At his value this year, you won't lose anything if you cut him after the first couple weeks if he just completely struggles. He's not the same guy that we thought he was, and you just pick up the next guy that's in line off the waiver wire.
Right. And that's, you know, one thing to be said about these late round guys is, you know, they're going to be the first off the roster. So you're going to know, hey, if Malik Smith comes out and he's not getting, you know, full time at bats at the top of the lineup, okay, maybe you look somewhere else. If Jorge Soler comes out and he's hitting, you know, Joey Gallo type batting averages, okay, you look somewhere else. You know, it's easier to trade in, but you're kind of looking for the biggest ticket for upside to the top. And, you know, I think Solaire's power, you know, people talk about, you know, power is so much easier to find. But if Solaire's batting profile was kind of figured out, I don't think you're going to find a ton of people that are going to provide, you know, more pop per contact than he would, if that makes any sense. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it does. And I think to Colin's point, really, about the post-site sleepers, I'm all about that. I think that's definitely a good source of value because, I mean, you have to look at, all right, we were high on this guy last year. What really changed in 1 year? Or really, was it like one bad month, two bad months? Like, what is it?
Yeah. It's the DeAndre Hopkins effect for those of you. And I know there's been a lot of football talk on Twitter, and that's why my brain is kind of in that. But you look at the year with Brock Osweiler and you go, why did it change? Why is he now a third round pick when we were drafting him as the third best wide receiver or whatever? You know, you got to take a look at these things. Smart people do the research the year before. It's not just the people doing it this year. And if they liked him then, there was probably a reason why, and a reason why he didn't live up. I'm going to go ahead and throw my last name out here. He is a guy that I talked about on the Roundtable podcast, so this will be a little bit of a rehash if you haven't heard that. It's also going to be an opportunity to get Ray's perspective here, but Nick Delmonico, as I stated, the shoulder injury that he sustained over the weekend doesn't sound to be too serious. He is a big fan favorite here in Chicago. With the Robert injury, I think there's going to be a decent run for playing time if he's on the field. I have my inside sources digging into information on the injury to see how severe it really is. But I think if he does get a decent run of playing time, I mean, obviously, I'm not looking to extrapolate out the numbers that he did from last year and expecting him to go nuts and hit, you know, 30 home runs or anything crazy like that. But, and I'm not just saying this because my girlfriend may be listening through the wall and she's a White Sox fan. I think the White Sox could be a little bit better. Like, if, you know, Moncada, Abreu, you know, Delmonico. I mean, there's a number of interesting guys out here. Avi Garcia, if he goes out and he has another good year. Wellington Castillo is in Chicago. He's a late catcher name that people have been going on to. What I'll say about the division is it's not not really good. Outside of Cleveland, there's not a ton of great pitching in the AL Central. And once again, if you're getting him for absolutely nothing, and if the playing time is there, I think Delmonico is a guy that could definitely outperform his draft stock. So, Colin, you already heard me kind of wax on him the other night. Let's get Ray's take here first.
I think Delmonico is a solid AL only fourth or fifth outfielder or bench player in deep leagues. And that's about it. I'm honestly not sure. I mean, I know he obviously came up and he did well, but I'm not necessarily so sure jumping too hard on the Delmonico train. I do like the fact that he walked 13.9% of the time in the 43 games that he played with the White Sox last year. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I'm not a believer that he has too much power. I don't think his 22.5 home run to fly ball rate is going to be repeatable in 2018. I mean, I think you're looking at a replacement level kind of player, in my opinion.
Fair enough. Colin?
Yeah, so I heard you talk about him, like you said, on the round table, and it kind of made me deep dive a little bit into him. I'm a little bit with Ray as, you know, an AL-only type guy, but he could find, you know, some really good playing time here in Chicago with Matt Davidson, who provides an empty batting average and a little bit of pop. I'm looking at roster resource right now, and I'll be honest, there's three guys that I've never even heard of, you know, close to being in their starting lineup with Ryan Cordell. Adam Engel, I think he's a speedster. And then Matt Davidson, like I said. So I know he played a little bit of third base last year. I did have him ranked in my third base ranking, I believe at third base number 35. So he could find himself in the DH role like Matt Davidson is, in the corner outfielder, just to kind of, you know, spend some time there before Eloy comes up, or some of their Uber prospects. But AL only, yes, last pick in the draft, because no one else, unless I'm in a draft with you, Evan, and you take him in the first round, then he's going to fall to me. So I'll be good.
No, and I'm not saying that he's going to be a superstar or anything like that. But, I mean, we're talking about, you know, guys that are going, you know, I'm trying to pull up, you know, Fantasy Pros ADP or whatnot. And I really should just be using the Invitational ADP. I may have been the only guy that drafted him. He's got a min pick of 330, high pick of 419. He's a last round guy. But you look at these names that are ahead of him on the list. Charlie Tilson, Hunter Pence, Keon Broxton, Colby Rasmus, Yasmani Tomas, Melky Cabrera, who's not on a team, Franchi Cordero, Jorge Soler. Okay, I mean, you know, playing time and power, and Delmonico could, in a realistic world, outproduce Soler. Peterson, Hayward, Granderson, Parra, Bautista, Matuk. I mean, these are guys that I'm not, you know, like, why am I excited to draft them over Nick Delmonico? Hunter Renfro, Austin Hayes, Dustin Fowler. Come on.
Well, Hayes and Fowler, I think, have a lot more upside than Delmonico does.
Yeah, and Renfro, too. I mean, there's a lot of – in this range, you're looking for that one stat category after you've constructed the team that you want. If you have a good average and you can afford the Renfro batting average with the plus home runs, or vice versa, and you want to go, you know, with a batting average safety of like a Hunter Pence – you need some steals in Jared Dyson, something like that. But Delmonico is a guy that, you know, might provide in a little bit in all the categories. And I'm looking to fill my bench up with a specialty guy that doesn't kill me anywhere else.
Fair enough. And that's, you know, an aspect of roster construction that maybe we'll hear from Ray in his piece that he was mentioning at the beginning of the show. Ray, why don't you remind everybody where you can be found on social media, anything interesting that you might have coming down the pipeline. And yeah, just give us the Ray plugs.
Yeah, the Ray plug is I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. Obviously, you can find me podcasting on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, writing on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and also writing at Roto Professor.
And Colin, we thank you for joining us on our regularly scheduled program here. Remind the folks where you can be found on Twitter and any special projects that you have coming on up.
Yeah, so I'm at CWeatherwax13. I'm going to kind of take a back seat from any more posting. I'll still do my podcasts with Mike the Rotocop and Randy Haynes on FWFB, but I got to get prepared for this main event that I got myself into that I have no idea what I'm going to do yet. It's a 15-team league, kind of like the Invitational that we just did, so I do have a little bit of experience, but I need to put my head in a book and not come out for a while.
Well, and if, you know, worst comes to worst, you have literally a stable of information behind you. I mean, we do provide the fantasy benefits. That's what we do.
Yeah, and we can't forget to plug the draft guide that has tons of wonderful information.
Yeah, it'll be on my side in the draft room at the Aria Hotel in Vegas for sure.
Yeah. Look at Ray. I you know, float him one like Rowan Gardner after he lost the magic touch, and he just whacks it right out of the park. Good job.
I try. I mean, I have to say, all kidding aside, it is pretty cool to go on Amazon and to click order and to buy a book that you had a hand in writing.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure with my time constraints what I was going to be able to pull off in the off season. I did kind of have remorse for not getting in it, and I definitely have the FOMO, as it's called, of for next year. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. You can find me on Twitter at FWFB. You can find me by my bedside praying that Ben Brennis is healthy the next time we do this podcast so I don't have to host it. Not that I didn't enjoy speaking with you guys, but you'd think that my ADD would be enough to multitask as much as Ben probably does, and it, not even close. So be sure to give us a rate and review. Be sure to check out all the other the fun stuff that's going on, the round table, the Myths podcast that we got going on. Colin, are you guys still planning on doing the trade podcast that you guys had teased at one point in time?
Yeah, so the Push Accept podcast, we might actually do one this week. We kind of got together as a group and decided, look, we'll get some content before the season starts, kind of get our name out there. But once the season starts, we're going to be getting the content flowing in and out. So anybody that's on, you know, in the comments section in this podcast, if you want to hit me up on Twitter, at CWeatherwax13, send me some trades from your leagues. We'll definitely analyze them. Me, myself, Ben Brennis, and two other guys from FWFB, Donnie Miller and Brad Wells. So we look forward to doing that throughout the season as well.
Absolutely. Concept Pods with Chuck Anderson and Dr. Dewhurst. We got the Dirt Dogs podcast with Mike the Rotocop. We've got you guys covered on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, so make sure that you're checking out all of our content, leaving us a rate and review, picking up the draft guide, and just overall kicking ass this draft season, because that's what we're here for. So until next time, for the crew, Ben Brennis, and myself, have a great baseball offseason. Thank you.